Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor New Zealand Thailand. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here today under some sad circumstances for a bonus podcast that I just had to do. As you'll all know by now, if you're listening to this, in episode 7, we lost two of the biggest characters of the pre-merge, fittingly, as we're going into the second phase of the game with the merge next week. So I thought I had to sit down for a bonus podcast with JT and Dylan, who both left this week, and talk to them a little bit about their games. So first, you'll be hearing from JT, and later on, you'll be hearing from Dylan. So, you know, you can get all the insights there and listen on later to get Dylan's insights. But right now with me, I have JT Muirhead. JT, I'm so, so sorry that this is talking to you under these circumstances, but thank you very much for being here.
That's no problem. Anything for RHAP Nation? Now, quick question from me. Mm-hmm. So, long-time listener, what is it? Do we say RHAP now, not RHAP?
I've always said rap, but now I just say a bunch of different ones because I don't know what's right, so I'm like a bit confused. I think has their own thing. Everyone's
I'm going RHAP.
Okay, you can do that. That's fine. Especially this week, I'm not going to fight you on anything.
Okay, that's much appreciated.
But JT, I was so, so sad to see you go this week. As anyone listening would know, I'm a big fan.
Not big enough, if you ask me.
How so?
Well, we'll get into that later, yeah.
Yeah, you are leading in the chizzy points. I don't know what's wrong, but okay. We'll get into the important stuff first, and then we'll talk about the chizzy points. So obviously you went out in some sort of quit or medivac this episode. Could you please explain what happened with the infection that you had on the show and what didn't we see?
So I'm happy with me and Jeff Pittman of the Trudeau Times. He were discussing this. I'm happy with the MediQuit label.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, obviously New Zealand is a much smaller scale, and I got a bacterial infection and had it for about a week or so, and I just couldn't be treated in game. So, it's just bearing in mind the scale of New Zealand operation, I had to leave.
Yeah.
For that, so I was sort of stupid thinking about it now, but at the time I was pretty against taking a merge spot and then potentially getting pulled into the merge. With what I had, there's a risk. You just can't leave it without potential serious repercussions. So if it hadn't cleared, it's just a risk of taking someone's merge spot, and it just didn't sit well. And like thinking about it now, I should have just been selfish, but yeah, I didn't want to at the time.
Did you think that Charney would still go to their tribal council that night, or do you think that that would cancel it?
No, I thought they'd still go.
Right.
So I was really confident that. So I had a pretty good track record of picking everything that happened.
Okay.
Production wise, and I thought I'd left it pretty late. I was pretty sure they'd go through with it, and I could basically. I had a pretty good grip on what the schedule was, and I thought that it wasn't going to fit, so I was assuming them. I had thought there was going to be a double vote, like both tribes go before, especially with the amount of throwing. I thought there was going to be a case where both tribes might go.
Right.
Before the tribes started throwing challenges, because they were so outmatched, I thought they might both go just to force the issue on New Charney.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd figured when that didn't happen, we were down to 12. I was, again, really confident it was going to be 10 people. And I don't know whether that's the case or not, but the teaser I hear, the promo might indicate that. But so, yeah, I was pretty confident that there'd still be a tribal and we'd be down to 10.
JT, I'm not sure anyone else on the island is thinking about production half as much as you are, surely.
Well, I honestly think I'm not actually that good at Match and Survivor. I'm just got good common sense around these things, and it's actually probably the biggest advantage I think you can have, but then it can be a curse as well.
How hard was it for you to leave then and leave in this manner?
It's really, really hard it's really hard to go back in time and picture how you felt. So when I think about it now, it's inconceivable I left, but at the time it was like a no-brainer. It was just like, why? I'm not an actor. I'm not paid to be there. I'm only there on my own terms. I don't really care about being on TV. I don't care about legacy or anything like that. I just want to go take Rob C's confessional account average from Amazon and win. Those were my only two goals.
Those two things.
And so I was just doing nothing for entire days, just lying by myself, not talking to anyone. Yeah, it's just, and I just thought to myself, what is the point of doing this? Like, why do this for another 3 days, take a risk just to get a boot episode? It just seems so vain. And I just sort of thought, is this, you know, like, it's such a big deal to me because I've watched this for so long, but really, is it that big a deal to not get a boot episode? Or, but obviously, and that was at the stage because of how I felt physically, I didn't think. It was frustrating. It was a really hard decision because I'm pretty confident if I get to the merge, I'm a lock for final six. And if I can get to six, if I can get to the final three, I'm pretty sure I win against nearly anyone.
Who was your plan for that six?
I really don't want to disappoint any of the fans out there, but I'm probably better at talking, at narrating the strategy than I am any sort of mastermind. Like, I didn't ever really have a big plan. I was just locked in with going with Eve, and I was quite keen to vote people out in order of height.
So I hear.
Yeah, and I was genuinely thought I could pull that off. I was going to go, so get Tara first, because it's someone that can both people can agree on. Then you go Aaron, Brad, and then everyone Aaron. After that. Yeah, why not? I'm sorry to disappoint, but I'm the original Aaron Truther.
Call is over.
I am the original person that spotted within a minute of meeting Aaron that he was even more of a cobra than I am. So Aaron, Brad, and then you have a really nice mix of heights where anyone could really go. And then all you need to do is sit next to Eve and anyone else. Even Dave's quite small. And then I just say, okay, everyone, get up in the order that you were. In the order that you were voted out, tall to small, thanks, give my check, I'm gone.
I don't even know, but somehow this is making sense to me. So it must have been a long day today.
It is making sense, or it isn't?
Yeah, it kind of is. Okay, let's get away from episode 7 and talk more about your strategy through the pre-merge.
Okay.
So when you got to Kung Kao after the swap, we'll start there. What was the vibe you got? Like, did you see any chance or avenue for you and Eve beyond winning challenges or an idol, or were you pretty much dead to right without those things?
So Kung Kao was, I had just had no chance. No one would talk strategy to me at all. And this, there was two factors, and one I couldn't predict at all. So on Chani, we were all really, not everyone was a huge, you know, like, quote unquote strategist, but everyone was pretty open to the gameplay. And just doing it and talking about it. But at Kung Kao, they kept a lot of stuff off camera. So one, they didn't want to talk to me. And two, they just didn't really talk about that stuff that much. So there wasn't any visible opening for me. So all I could do, I thought my best strategy, and it went against everything in my nature, was to just try and repair my image as much as possible. Try and make Brad think I was going to be a jury vote for him or someone like him. Just try and get to know Lisa and Tara. And I just knew if I did anything threatening, it would confirm all of their suspicions.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably some of the gameplay I'm proudest of is that first vote, even though it didn't work out. I didn't move. I was just so confident that Liam and Eve would stick to the plan. I just didn't move. I didn't have private conversations with anyone except for that 5-minute chat that's on the episode with Eve. And me and Liam just communicated via winks and sort of nods about who to vote for. So, it was a gamble, but I just thought that's my only long-term chance. I thought I could go in there and I thought I could probably... So these things screwed me, right? The person who wanted me out the most in the entire game is Lisa, and was the obvious person to flip.
Why did she want you out so much?
I think she saw me as part of, you know, this is all conjecture on my part, but I think we got on really well, but she doesn't want to be up against the version of her, another version of her. Do you know, like, it's two, we fill the same space. Like, we're quite different people, but the... super fan tag. You know, I wanted that tag that I wanted to sit at the end. I was going to snap my glasses in half. say that I didn't need them, you know, like the Andy Kaufman strategy. So I just wore this ridiculous hat, this shirt. It was all designed to make you think I'm this goofy fan that had no chance.
And now I'm sitting next to the shortest people in the game.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, Lisa was out to get me. Tessa, so then the person, even though the outpost aside, I was most confident of working with Tessa out of everyone, and then she's hurt her head, so there's really that's out the window.
Why was that out the window when she hit her head?
Well, she was away for quite a bit of the time, and then quite, she's not, or maybe not, maybe just sort of, well, not away, but like recovering from that. It's, I'm hardly going to go up to her in the middle of the shelter while she's resting and just be like, what do you reckon? Alliance type thing, you know?
AK would do that.
Yeah, but I was being watched. He probably would. I was being watched by three people. I really thought I could. The other thing that was, so let's put it this way. I knew there's no chance for us as a three fit to flip anyone, but I was knew I could survive one vote because they wouldn't vote for me. And I was pretty sure I could get through a second. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to get through a third unless something seismic could happen. But I was confident I'd be the last out of the three Chani to go. And I thought, well, I'm not going to play all my cards now. I'll get through one because they're too scared to vote me. And then two, I'll go full, you know, Joe Mena style.
Right. And then do you think they'd have been scared of another idol and would have gone for Eve? Or why do you think she would have gone before you?
I mean, I'd like to think I could. I think I just needed time. Like, I'm actually, the character I played with camera is quite different to how I am around camp. And so when people say, I thought JT's cunning or whatever, that's based purely from that outpost with Tessa.
Yeah.
And so when they meet me and see I'm not actually, you know, as bad as maybe she'd made out, partly maybe because of embarrassment or whatever, then I'd actually found that I was getting along with everyone. And I think especially after Brad saw Josh go, I think he realized this isn't going to be quite the walk in the park we thought it was.
Right. Yeah. Did you regret any of how you handled the outpost and that was her reaction going back? I mean, I know obviously you did Jedi mind trick in her into getting that information, but after that, did you kind of regret how it all went down?
It's like AK said on his podcast, you know, that was some of the most insightful commentary I've heard, and he was 100% right. But like, that's how I am. I'm only out there to have fun, you know, and that's why I left. I'm not there for any reason. I just want the money, but I want to have fun. And just being passive isn't fun. I knew as soon as I walked in there, I saw the small dish. I knew it was going to be a clue, right? It's too small to be anything else. So I thought, I wasn't even really concentrating about the fire. I just thought, I just wanted to know whether it was two clues or one. If it's one clue, you know, it's going to be the same instructions. And this is where being a super fan hurts you, because I'm thinking it's going to be at the same position at each camp. So I just need to get a look at it.
Right.
And then I thought, if it's at a challenge, it'll be a Wentworth style one where, and I would have just walked over and got it. I don't care who would have seen me. If it had been on the challenge course, I do not care. Like, I just would have got it. I just got too caught up. It's stupid. Like, it's 100% the wrong thing to do. But my gameplay, once I saw how the tribes were divided, I knew that my under the radar game wasn't going to work. So I just wanted to go Goodyear blimp over the radar, you know, like flow through the game with a huge target in me. But I think if I'd got, that's why I'm so confident. If I get to the end, I get the votes.
Who would you have said was your best friend on from the new Kung Kao people, besides Eve?
Out of
those four, yeah.
It's hard. Like, I mean, I didn't get a lot out of any of them. Lisa and I had a lot in common, but it was so hard because I just knew she was, you know, not going to work with me. It's quite hard in those situations to build anything genuine when everyone's just watching like a hawk. And I get so bored with lack of simulating conversation. Like, just, it was so hard for me. I talked to Brad a lot, but I just don't think he believed anything I was saying, but I was just telling him the truth.
Yeah. Did you suspect that they were throwing the challenges, or at least in the Josh vote, that they threw that challenge to help you and Eve?
Yeah, so the new channel, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So I was, I think if you, obviously when I watch the episodes, I'm looking at myself and I'm just looking at Dave the whole time because I'm just trying to give him a signal, like, but then he was so, Dave is so competitive, but he was also being so like demonstrably competitive in that challenge. There was something off, but I could never really, he is like that when he loses anyway.
Mm.
Like he's like that with everything he chops. When the firewood he chops is also perfect and he can't, but he was being so over the top. And but it was mainly the thing that off put me is that the thing that I thought was really strange was that Dylan was in one of the key positions. But then I was looking over and I was thinking, why is, if they were throwing it, it must be obvious. And then why is Josh, you know, then Dylan must be in on it, but then Josh must be on it because he's in, Josh would be one of the best athletes there and he's in the least effectual place.
Right. But yeah, I guess he didn't seem to realize it.
Nah.
But did you realize that Kang Kao was trying to throw it in the last episode as well?
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty obvious. And I was just trying to do my best. I was trying to do my best. Everyone knew I was pretty out of it by that stage and I was adding nothing, but I was just trying to help. I just, you know, for Eve's sake, because if I go, if they throw it and I go, then they could well just do the same thing and get rid of her. She'd hurt her game by sticking with me, and yeah. I really felt a duty to do anything I could to get us both to the merge, and if not both, then her.
Yeah. All right, well then let's go back to the early days at Chani. So how did the initial alliance come together, and especially the plan of that dominant Chani alliance, you know, for the first vote?
The first vote, this is like, I was just, this is the most fun I've had. Like, this was everything, getting out to play Survivor. I can only, you know, you always hear that Survivor brings out your true self, and I was really worried. I was really, really worried about going on TV and being, you know, like losing my temper or bullying someone. Not that that's my true self, but thinking, you know, is that what's going to come out when I'm stressed? But I was just, I got out there and it was just, I was thinking, okay, fly under the radar, don't do anything. But it all just fell into my lap straight away, and it was just so much fun. So that's Eve's the one who approached me, and I guess she didn't get all the credit she deserves for it. But me and Aaron had already, like, me and Aaron were looking for the idol while we were doing our first walk to the well, and everyone's going, oh, it's so cool to be here. So glad we're on the tribe together. And I just look over, and Aaron's darting around the back of a tree, and I was like, nah, okay, it's on. So we talked, and I think Eve must have seen that we've gone off straight away, so she came to find us, I think, and then played it pretty well, like she just bumped into me. And then I thought, oh, well, I might as well strike now, and just asked her who she wanted, and then I think you see me going to Dave, and then it all looped back around. And so we had a five-person on day one, but I don't think I'm a great Survivor player, but I did one thing that was, I think I'm a great pre-swap Survivor player. If it was back for no swap days, I think I'd be really good every time. So that first vote, that Yost vote, me, Frankie, and Aaron had decided how to, I had suggested splitting the vote. And this is, again, stupidly risky. But I just thought, let's split the votes on the first one, even though I was pretty sure there wasn't an idol. And then we had Frankie voting one way and Aaron voting the other. I can't remember which one. And then later in the afternoon, I switched it back. I think Aaron and I might have talked. But anyway, I switched it back. So I knew that meant that Aaron and Frankie had lied to half the tribe, and I hadn't lied to anyone. So I went and told Renee right before the tribal who to vote for, and she was saying, I don't think it's Yost. And I was just saying, trust me, Renee, it's Yost. And that's why after the tribal, she's complaining about being left out.
Right.
Because Frankie had lied to her face and told her to vote Renee.
Because who does Aaron vote for then? He votes for Carla, doesn't he?
He votes for Carla because he didn't want to go back on his word to Liam.
Right.
But once he told me that, I was like, perfect. I'm going to stitch you both up here.
Right.
And got Frankie to switch. So then I could, she's lied to Renee and Dave's face. And then all it takes for me is to tell Liam the truth the next day. And he knows, although Aaron was doing the completely honorable thing and just didn't want Liam feeling like he was on the outs when he wasn't, it was just that he wasn't included in that day one five. But that's, you know, it's still the truth that Aaron knew and still, you know, voted, even though he knew that Carl wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. So then, and how did it devolve to the place where Frankie, who was part of that alliance, like, why did you were faced, I guess, in episode three with the decision between her or Eve, who'd been a closer ally to you? So is that why you went with Frankie?
Yeah, like, it was never really a hard decision for me. I think that, you know, that you have this construct of, I hate to get sort of Fishback-esque here, but you have the construct of an alliance, but there wasn't ever really one. So the next morning I made sure, and this is like not, this is not sort of dastardly gameplay. This is just me really liking Liam and not wanting someone to feel like they're ostracized and they're out of the group. But I made sure I was the first person to talk to Liam and Renee the next day. And I just told them everything. I said, there's a five-person alliance, but that's just people being scared on day one. I'm not committing to five people I met within the first hour. Like, I'm good with you. I like you. And so at Chani, we sort of broke Survivor for TV a bit, because there was no dominant group and a group of other. There was a lot of, there were some central points of power. So say you've got me and Aaron, and then on either side, it might be me and Eve and Aaron and Dave, but then me, Dave and Liam are actually three people that spend a lot of time together, and me, Eve and Aaron have a three, but really I'm really close with Renee as well, and Renee's not close with Eve. So there was, while it may look like a group of five versus four or three after that, but really there was no clear hierarchy, so no one ever really felt on the bottom, and I just made sure I was in the middle of a lot.
Yeah. Why was Yost the first target, though? Was it because you felt she was coming after you?
No, I just knew she didn't gel with me. It wasn't any big reason. I just I knew we were going to lose a lot of challenges. I mean, we had I was the second biggest person in Chani, and I'm 74 kg. I knew, so this is a game, like, I could get, so you know it's New Zealand, right? The challenges are so good this year. They're amazing, and they've, like, done such a good job, but you know they're going to be a lot of one-at-a-time stuff,
mm-hmm.
because they're not going to have 10 people to rescue a group swimming. They're not going to have the structures they have in America. It's just not going to work the same. So if you're going to have a lot of one-on-one stuff, gladiatorial, and you've got by far the smallest tribe, you basically know you're going to keep going back, or you're at least going to go twice pre-swap. So I just wanted to get rid of the people that I felt were never going to gel with me.
Yeah. But did you get pushback from other alliance members who might have wanted her for strength?
Yeah, Dave, I think, well, that's the other thing. I really wanted to nip the whole vote for strength narrative in the bud straight away. I just don't think physical strength is that important. I don't care. I don't even, you know, like, I don't care about going to trouble. I believe in the Matt Singh. So, and I got no pushback from Aaron. I'm telling you, Aaron is, you know, what you see now. He's as bad as I am. He didn't want to do the easy, take the easy option. I definitely pushed for it. I think it doesn't mean you need to do a crazy thing every tribal, but we were both pretty comfortable with that. Frankie was so on board. And then I think everyone else was just sort of going to go with the flow on that first one.
Yeah. So you've called yourself, is it the father of the international Matt Singh? Is that what's in your Twitter bio?
Yeah, that's right.
Was that something that you actively went in wanting to implement, or was it something that once you saw that Chani was weaker and you were losing challenges that you just went with it?
I believe in it as a general concept, like having heard of, you know, people talk about it on HAP. I just think it's because you get a chance to get rid of, it's great for my personal game. I just think it generally works well if you can, but yeah, if you know that you're going to go more often than not, it's hard with like lots of swaps like there are in the US, but I knew there'd only be one swap, and I knew I was actually really, really hoping we'd go four straight times.
Wow.
And I think, because I didn't really ever feel, I don't have any sort of, you know, need for power or control. But after Frankie went, that was vital for me because it really put me in the best position. I think outside of Dave, I'm in everyone's top two then.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I could really go after anyone I wanted then, and then go into a swap with a group of people that have never had a chance to test anything, super paranoid, no idea what to do, and all we'd need is, you know, I think it's actually a better situation for us to go one person down into that situation.
Who would have been that person, do you think, that would have gone next?
So my Cobra brain, I like to think I would have taken Dave, but I just really like Dave.
Mm.
And Dave's social game is so good. He, like, despite all my instincts, there was something after the challenge with the idol, where Brad finds the idol. It's not in, I think it's in the, yeah, it's in the episode. We come back and he says, oh, Brad told me he's got it. And I just had full red alert. Like, I never really got paranoid or like anything like that, but I just thought, this guy, this is strange to me. This is no good. If they're talking across, they're trying to build something. And, you know, like, it was pretty, I think I was, after the outpost with Josh and Aaron, I think I was right to what they were thinking.
Right.
It's about some sort of, Jocks Alliance. And
could
so
you not have been in the Jocks Alliance?
I actually gave a confessional about this. I really wanted to be king of the duds. Like, if it's duds versus duds, the best position is to be bottom of the, like, be sort of in tow with the duds. Studs, but be the top of the duds. Then you get all duds votes, but you're all still respected by the studs.
Maybe just don't call them duds because that phases.
Oh, I think it's okay if you're king of the duds. So I would have loved to take Dave then. I never wanted Carla to go. I would like to think, yeah, it's the same with Aaron. I just liked Aaron and Dave so much. I'm not sure I've got the killer instinct, but I don't know if I would have pulled trigger.
Yeah. And so around that time, E finds the idol and you have a few confessionals about getting the idol somehow. Did you have a plan or like, do you have an actual method that you thought you were going to get the idol or was it just a joke?
yes and no. Like Eve knew all about what I was saying, but I also thought that I actually thought genuinely, because I was just telling Eve the whole time, I think she would have given it to me, you know, when we got to Kang Kao, she would have given it to me to play.
Yeah.
But I was just playing it up, you know, like you're out there to be a character. I'm a huge Mario Lanza fan and I really love, like, I listened to his podcast with Coach, you know, like a historian special interview. And I just love that aspect of being a character. And I knew I was going to be boiled down to a sort of a derivative, you know, mastermind archetype, and that's not really me. But you've got to give them something to work with if that's not you. And I wasn't going to do anything like steal Eve's idol and vote her out, but it's the sort of thing I would think about, you know, like, so it was just a way of showing my character while having some fun.
Yeah. And so in the episode this week, how did you guess immediately that Lisa had a vote steal?
Oh, just one thing on the idol. This is my big other regret. I used to wear that idol around camp all the time, just like around every day I'd put it on. And I really wanted to wear it to that tribal council and around my neck, but people were getting too paranoid about Eve using it.
Yeah.
So she left it at camp. But I really wanted to walk in there just to one chisholm up.
Yeah, he would have had the biggest smile. His eyes would have been wide.
He would have loved it.
The vote steal. How did you know that Lisa?
It was just so obvious. Like, I don't know if I hold Lisa to a higher standard than other people, but I was so disappointed. I loved it. Like, that's what I want to be doing the whole time. It's like, again, I don't deserve to win Survivor because I do stuff like that. I'm not good. I'm good at some stuff. I'm just can't help myself. You know, like, Lisa is the person, the obvious person to flip. I know when she starts talking, she's got some sort of advantage. Don't antagonize her by, like, interrogating her and just being a smarmy, like, prick about it. But I can't help myself. But the other thing that really, again, gets me is I knew, like, I could sense that people that aren't contestants, let's put it that way, would be loving it. Like, I always knew, I couldn't help, I was really trying not to perform and like to hide myself around camp, my true self. Well, I'll put it this way. I was really trying to just keep the performance to the camera and my true self, which is more demure and quiet around camp. But stuff like that happens, and it's like stuff with Tess at the outpost. I can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, you interrogated her and you guessed it, but then you were like, it's fine, but it was like you'd already done it.
Yeah, that's. I haven't watched any of the episode because it's too hard to watch, by Adam from, you know, Contestant Adam actually sent me that clip, which is really nice of him. Yeah. And I love the part where I say something like, oh, that, I thought they'd give you a double vote. Mm, that'd be good. But yeah, again, it's just how I'm geared to play. And I was so frustrated by that stage. Like, again, the thing that compounded, it's just such a shitty feeling being that physically depleted and not being able to play at all. And like, I don't think it's good gameplay on any of Kung Kao. You know, half of Kung Kao, that Kung Kao 4 has not seen a lot of Survivor. And I think they genuinely think that it's normal in Survivor to have a group of eight or whatever and just march to the end, and everyone just accepts their place. Mm. So it was super frustrating playing with, Lisa and Tara, who I respect, but I just knew I didn't have an argument for them to flip to me. What is the argument I have? I don't have anything other than fear tactics. And if I do that sort of stuff, you know, if I go full Joe Mena or Hansel, you know, like, not to put them in the same bracket, but that's my only card left to play, and I can play that once. And if I play that pre-merge, I've still got to get four votes to win.
Yeah. So did you have any other favorite moments or anything else that you wanted to talk about from your experience?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So I made a fake idol. I know everyone says this, but I genuinely did it. I found a marble and some other stuff. I'd walk around the beach. Because it was like an estuary. It's a lake, obviously, but at the back side of our island was where a whole lot of currents would come in. So just washed up all this junk. So I had some cool stuff and I had a really good idol. But once I saw Eve's idol, I thought, oh, there's pretty much no one that's going to be tricked by this because everyone had seen both idols. Mm-hmm. But I had all the clues. And then I put them in the top of my bag, just hoping someone would look in them in the new Kung Kao. And I don't know the fact, but I'm pretty sure that's part of the reason they were so convinced I had one. But the other reason was that at the challenge where Brad found the idol, they came in like 5 minutes before us, so I had no chance of getting that, and I was so pissed. Again, like, I had no reason for doing this. It's stupid. And I never really thought about it again until that tribal council. But I walked over to the bench at the back, felt around. There wasn't anything there. And then I saw Adam watching me. So I just bent down again and put my hand in my pocket and winked at him. Because I would wink at the whole Kung Kao constantly and try to talk to them. And no one but Edward Adam would ever talk to me back. And I just put it in my pocket and just, like, the one thing I'm good at is bluffing, I guess, and then just walk back. And, again, stupid, because Adam, I'm pretty sure still to this day, thinks I had one. And if I'd made the merge, I'm going to be a target because they think I'm going to have an idol. But that's why all those guys were so convinced. And then the other really good one I had was, this is a scoop for, the Noah-Doz.
Thank you.
Brad lost his idol. Ooh. He dropped it out of his pocket. I found it, had it for probably 3 hours, knew what it was, showed him, claiming it was mine. And then he had to come up to the well and ask for it back. And I gave it to him back, and we had to refilm it, and it was probably one of the most glorious moments.
Was production like, you give him his idol?
No, I was always new. I just knew, what am I going to do? Because if I actually keep it, it's just going to be a he said situation, right?
Yeah.
One thing I clarified with straight away with, and I hope Brad listens to this, I told him I kept forgetting to bring this up in other interviews, so There you go, Brett. One thing I clarified with Eve, when Eve got that idol, I said to her, that's our idol, no one else's. and so I said straight away, I checked with production what the rules are. And it didn't matter. Eve had to give it to the person. She had to transfer ownership. So there's a point where Aaron takes it to Outpost. It doesn't matter. It's not his because Eve didn't give it to him.
Right.
So I sort of thought by that, it's probably going to be the same if I find a lost one.
Yeah. Would you have, if you had got to that challenge at the same time where the idol was buried and you knew where it was, what is the percentage chance that you're tackling some people to try and get it first?
I wouldn't be tackling people, but I would have just walked right in front of anyone. If Matt's if we had a fair shot at it and say Matt's saying come on in, I'm just going to walk over, pick up the mat. It was so easy to get. I just kicked up our mat and had a look under it. I would have just walked over, picked it up, walked back. Mm-hmm. I knew that Tessa was going to tell people. And Aaron is like, not to give you any more bloody fuel to your fire. Aaron was really astute with how he would watch how Kung Kao would watch me. And he said to me, it's so obvious that I'm a big target over there, the way they would look when I would say stuff at tribal councils. At challenges.
Mm.
So I sort of thought, I'm in hot water here anyway for a swap. I want this. I need the swap in some ways to be able to have any chance in the merch. I actively wanted the swap. I also knew I was in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. And the golden question, would you play again?
Oh, definitely. 1,000%. I don't know if the chances are very high, but yeah, absolutely. It's as much as my philosophy is probably a bit different from a lot of people and that I take Survivor. You know, I love Survivor and I've watched it for so long, but I don't, take it super seriously. And that's sort of something I don't want to alienate or offend anyone, but it's still, in saying that, it's still absolutely heartbreaking and devastating for me at a personal level to not be able to merge when I feel 18 years I've spent thinking, I joke. I mean, the other day someone said on Twitter that Amazon was in 2003.
Yeah.
In my recollection, I'm 9 years old watching Rob. I'm only 6-7 years younger. I cried, I'm pretty sure, when he got voted out of All Stars, which is incredibly embarrassing. But
worth it, though.
Watching Rob's season, so the first season, obviously, and then, Boston Rob and then the Rob that sucks, and seeing guys that are Boston Rob, not exactly, but guys that are like me, that I, relate. It's the first time really seeing people on TV that I related to. And so it's a big deal for me. And a lot of that is I've spent 18 years thinking I'd be really good at it. And I never really got the chance to see whether that's true. But in saying that, I had an awesome time and met cool people that I really like. And I never thought that would happen. And, I achieved my main goal of never making Survivor more than anything it is.
Yeah, well, we loved watching you, and it was very, very sad to watch that horrible scene with the boats coming to. I mean, I love Matt Chisholm, but not like that, not at times like that. So we're very sorry to see you go, but thank you for coming on to RHAP or RHAP and joining us for my first ever exit interview, and it's been a joy to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, and you're doing very well. And Shannon, not to derail the end of your pod, but I wanted to give, can I just give 3 points to any future players?
Okay. For stuff that has happened, but yes.
What do you mean stuff that's happened?
Yeah, stuff only for stuff experience. That we've seen. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we so.
This will not count, by the way, but sure, give the points.
No, not points. No, sorry, advice.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
sorry, not points. No, oh, yeah, are we going to make the announcement?
What?
Would you
what
like
did
to
I
announce
promise
it
you?
Or should I?
What did I promise
okay,
you?
Okay, guys, okay, IHAP Nation, this has come down. This is... Rob C has approved this.
He
it's
has
come
not.
From the top.
Absolutely has not.
And DJ LaBelle Klein is going to make a song about this, and that is also confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. I am the King Cobra. It's confirmed as the new Keeper of the Chizzy Points.
Okay.
And so next, if there is another season, Well, any I'll do this for any season, really. It doesn't matter to me. I will personally deliver if it's in New Zealand and post if it's in Australia. A deputy Ferrari brain for the top Chizzy Point leader after, you know, pre-merge,
okay.
Which we all know, pre-merge, they are dateable.
Okay.
The greatest quitter ever, they're calling me. and we could put that on Reddit, see what if anyone can beat that. Austin Taylor, maybe.
Johnny Fairplay, but anyway, continue.
No, does that, I mean, yeah, okay, yeah. So a deputy Ferrari brain for merge and Julie McGee hat. No, that's still could have a King Cobra hat, which will be bright green, still in the trademark Legionnaire style for the overall Chizzy Point.
Oh my God. Wait, what was your advice for them?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm actually going to keep this. Two bits of advice. Three bits, actually. First one is, and I will, I'm going to email you all my bullet points after the season. And you can post it somewhere.
So excited about that.
Thank you. I'm totally impervious to your sarcasm. right, so here, I'm just stalling now, so I can find it. Okay, so one is, go back, if you're going to play it, go back and listen to AK. I think there's a couple of podcasts he did last year, Deep Dives, that are so good. So just go back and listen to those. And then listen to the Boston Rob ones with Rob C, because they're incredible. That's advice, bit of one, advice one. First bit of advice. Second bit is, do not be teacher's pet. And I think Rob's actually been talking about this recently. Do not be teacher's pet at challenges. Like, that was my biggest issue. I give off such a quiet, serious vibe. And then I come on, like, my character's too full force at challenges, and it irks people. And especially, you've got to remember, and something that I never, ever thought, there are a lot of people that go on Survivor just to be on TV. And that's, like, mind-blowing to someone like me, but it's true. And if you become teacher's pet, it's no good for your long-term game, or Chizzy's pet. And the third point, are you enjoying these so far,
Sean? Yeah, give me the last one. Just in case I go on, I need to know.
Okay, third one is, it's just Survivor's all been just nice to live with, right? Like, so don't, you can be a threat to someone, just don't be a threat to their self-image. That's when it becomes an issue.
Okay. Well,
and I'm available for personal coaching sessions if you want to be someone that's pre-merge.
Well, thank you for the words of wisdom, JT. I think my brother changed the Chizzy Point leaderboard. You are still in front, but he changed your name from the JT that sucks to the JT that doesn't suck in honor of your departure.
Oh, that's so nice.
And you did win the pre-merge Chizzy, which isn't a thing, but we'll make it a thing. And we're very sorry to see you.
Ferrari. Thank you. And hey, you've done awesome. And it's just from everyone in the cast. Well, I'll speak for the few people that are fans, but I think most people are listening. But it's such, I think Nick said this about on his last podcast for Aussie last year, like, it's such a big part of the Survivor, modern era Survivor contestants' experiences to have podcasts and, you know, IHAPs. To have you doing this, taking your time, it's awesome for us as well.
Thank you, JT. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everyone, for listening as well. And you can hear my chat with Dylan coming up next. All right, everyone, I'm here with the second interviewee of today. Please join me in welcoming Dylan Conrad. Dylan, such sad circumstances to be speaking to you, but I'm very glad to talk to you. Thank you for being here with me.
Oh, no worries. You know, like, anything to interact with the fan community, like, I'm all about it. So, super stoked to be here, and obviously not super stoked about the circumstances, but we'll take what we can get, eh? And we'll have a chat about the season.
Yeah, Dylan, you're someone I've been talking to on Twitter for, like, years before you were a Survivor contestant and I was a podcaster, so it's just kind of surreal to be meeting again in this format.
yeah, like, obviously I've always been massive on Survivor and I loved it, and yeah, it's weird to have these new interactions with people. I think a lot of people look at me and go, oh my gosh, he's on Survivor now. It's a weird thing. I'm like, no, I'm still a normal person. Like, I'm still just a fan. Like, I very much just feel like a very lucky fan who got to live out, you know, one of his dreams. And I'm still just that lucky old fan. And I'm loving watching the season and watching it play out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we'll definitely talk about your experience watching the season back. But let's go further back than that and talk about you playing the game. So you arrive on Kung Khao when did you sense that that social energy had kind of turned against you? Was it early on, or did you have more allies earlier on that we didn't see?
I think this is an interesting one to talk about, and I think it's largely down to edit. Obviously, I was the social outcast of the tribe. I don't think that was the reality of the whole thing. I definitely had relationships out there, and early on in the game, I made those social connections with people in the tribe. You saw, I think, in episode one, I wanted to start an outcast alliance because I noticed that the three boys were very good. Mm-hmm. They were very tight with each other. And I guess a little bit of backstory to that is we had a little bit of time around each other in pregame. And the podcaster in me stepped back and I said, okay, like I'm looking at all of these people based on the limited interactions they're having with the cast. I picked up on things about people and I picked winner's picks. I went in the game with winner's picks and people like Josh and people like Matt.
Josh was my winner pick.
Yeah, Josh is honestly sitting there at pregame, Josh was my winner's pick. And I said, great, I've got the winner's picks. Now I have to figure out how to get rid of these people within the game because there's no way I can win if they're sitting around there. So, I saw people like Josh and Brad, and I wanted to work with them initially because there's that meat shield strategy that I talk about in the first episode, and I would love to work with them, and I think they're the kinds of people that would be happy to have someone like me around because I'm kind of a non-entity. I'm non-threatening, I think. At least that's how I thought I was coming across initially. And, I tried to get in with those guys, and it just didn't work out. We just weren't rowing it down enough, and it just didn't go well there. And so, Keisha approached me. We had a conversation, and we talked about the social dynamics that we saw going on. And interestingly enough, the next conversation that I had with anyone in the tribe was with Adam, because I looked at Adam, and I saw someone that was very similar to myself. And I thought, look, this is someone I can probably get along with really well. I think in certain I think in a different circumstance, we probably would get on really well as well, because we fill that same kind of personality in the game of Survivor. It's just his was more prevalent because he was in a majority position. And so I had a conversation with him and I said, hey, look, like we're winning challenges. Like I'm not really concerned about going to tribal council. I don't think we need to talk about strategy, but like let's talk. And he was open to it. We had a big conversation about the tribe dynamic and where we thought everything was at, and we had a contingency plan that I thought was going to go into place if we ever went to tribal. But to me, honestly, I didn't see us going to tribal ever. We were dominating. I think this is probably a little bit big-headed in myself, but we smashed those first two challenges, and then after they got rid of Yost, I was like, we're in a good spot. Like I don't see there being any issues with this tribe. Like we're pretty cohesive. We listen to each other. We all work together really nicely. And then I had that conversation with Adam, and little did I know Adam was working with Brad right. By that point. Yeah. And I think that's where it all went downhill for me. You know, Adam was like, Brad's Dylan's super deceptive. He's out to get you. Like, this is all based on assumption, obviously, because I've never talked to Adam about this kind of stuff. But I do think that's probably where everything went downhill for me.
Yeah.
Because, as you see, Adam is someone who is quite socially savvy out there and he's got a lot of connections. And, that was where I think the entire game for me went downhill. Purely from that conversation with one wrong person. And I didn't understand the implications of that till a little further down the track. And I continued on with my conversations. I had a conversation with Lisa at an immunity challenge when she was freaking out about the fact that we might lose and she might go home. And I just calmed her down and I said, look, like, you know Survivor and I know Survivor. Like, it's not like that. Like, you're not just going to go home because you're the weakest person. Like, that's not how this game works. And it's 2018. Like, that's the weak people just don't get taken out because that's stupid. Like, it's about moves and like, it's about making the right moves, and just getting rid of you isn't the right move because you're the weakest here. Like, we're still a very strong tribe. And then I had a good conversation with Tara. Like, Tara is someone who, to me, she reminds me of my own mother. And so I saw a lot of that stuff in there, and I felt like the connections I was building with people were really genuine and really honest. But obviously, because there was that that strong opinion of what Adam was saying about me, everyone just looked at every conversation I was having and they were saying, oh, he's sneaky, he's deceptive, he's using certain things to appeal to people that isn't honest. which was hard. And I think that's what leads to me, you know, outcasting myself in a way, because for me, like, my whole livelihood is based around trust. And I build quick trust with people, you know, in my job every day. And so that's what I was doing. I was going out there to be trustworthy. I didn't want to be the kind of person who was seen as super deceptive unless it needed to be that way. Because, like, I understand it's a national TV show and people are going to be watching it, and I don't want people to come up and approach me and be like, oh, there's that snake, like, and he works in retail, like, oh, it's so gross. So yeah, like, it was a hard one, and it's just unfortunate that Adam found the numbers, like, not unfortunate on his part, but unfortunate for me that he found those numbers before I did. And then you know, I basically had to work really hard from that moment on. I think being the last person picked definitely left me in an interesting spot.
Yeah.
Because, you're the last person picked, but at the same time, I technically wasn't picked by Kung Kao. I was kind of just given to Kung Kao because I was the last person left over.
Yeah.
And so I think me coming in and looking to build social connections with people could have just been seen as me trying to scrape my way out of what I perceived to be, like, the bottom.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of factors that work into it. You know, perspectives on people is a huge thing as well. Like, I was obviously a person out there who wasn't physically dominant. Like, you look at the lineup of men and you can tell that Brad's there because he's, you know, a physical asset. You can tell that Matt's there because he's a physical asset. Like, the same with Adam and Josh. And then you look at me and it's like, well, why did he get cast in the season? Like, if he's not here because he's a physical asset, like, there's something else there.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the perception that I got. And that's the same thing that happened with JT from the Kung Kao perspective as well. Everyone was like, oh, he's not a physical male and he's got glasses and he looks a little sneaky. So I think he's falling into that same category as Dylan. So, yeah, we had a similar narrative in terms of the way we approached things, and the way we did things. But it just didn't work out for me on my tribe, because I think there was a few people on my tribe that were more invested in that whole mateship idea. And unfortunately for snakes in the Survivor game, you know, like me and Nick, it just doesn't work out when you're in a tribe full of mateship. It's just the way it falls, and you got to play it how you got to play it every day and hope for the best.
Yeah, when you were in that original tribe dynamic, could you sense that Leaf and Tara were very much on the other side, or were they with you to a degree but the numbers just weren't there?
It was an interesting one, because the tight five was very obvious. And so it's funny to see them call themselves the invisible five. You know, the boys always hung out. The boys always did fishing together. Like, Brad and Matt Brad and Josh were like an obvious pair. Tessa and Adam were another obvious pair. And so, yeah, once we sensed that there was a five, I actually had a conversation with Keisha about potentially working with Matt. I just said to her, I was like, look, I think you've probably got better connections with Matt. Like, how about you go and have, you know, how about you go and start an alliance with him? Maybe appeal to him and say, how about we have a power couple and we can put the Dylan and Keisha thing on the back burner, because if you can get into a power coupling with him and sell me off as this idea of just being this extra vote that will help you guys out, that might work in our favor, because Matt did seem to be the person in that five who was not necessarily the bottom, but he just wasn't in a discernible pair there.
Right.
Lisa and Tara were very much the obvious two that were on the outskirts of that, but not necessarily on the outskirts of that, if that makes sense. They still were included in the tribe dynamic.
Do you think that they knew that they were on the outskirts of that, or did they think it was like a seven?
I think that they were aware of their position in the game. But I also think that for me, the thing that Lisa is very good at, and she deceived me for a very long time out there, she really leaned into that archetype that she has. Every single confession I had about Lisa was just about how lovely she was. She was just this nice lady who was out here to give it a go and not really win. And it's funny that she had that confessional in the most recent episode where Brad was saying, oh, I think it's really great that you don't want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was having similar conversations, like similar confessionals about Lisa. Like, my perception of her was that she was literally out there fulfilling a bucket list. And I naively said to camera, like, look, Lisa just wants her bucket list ticked off. And if I can be the person who helps her tick off that bucket list, I think she's going to vote with me. And I'm really excited about that, because she seems like an easy person to just kind of pull along.
Right.
So, yeah, she – so much credit for Lisa in terms of the pregame. She did really well in terms of you know, having a differentiation between the game person that she was in her confessionals compared to what she's doing, you know, like outwardly to the tribe. And yeah, like you see in that episode two, Tess is pretty keen on bringing Lisa in into that tight five and having her as a sixth number. So she was definitely doing the right things to ensure her spot was there. And I think at the end of the day, like, Tara and Lisa were just trying not to ruffle feathers. Yeah. They just wanted to go as far as they could, and when the time was right, then they wanted to strike. And unfortunately for me, that wasn't the position I was in. I was like, no, I need to make moves now because I'm actually kind of stuck. Like, I'm literally nine.
Yeah. Of those seven, who were your closest relationships, either strategic or personal?
My closest relationships that I had out there were, on a personal level, was Josh.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, like, Josh and I had this really good connection. It was, you know, after day nine, I think that was where it all really got really awkward for me. As a bit of context, we went to that the challenge where you have to dive down and unleash, like, release the wheels. We went to that challenge, and it didn't work properly, and so we had to go back to camp. And
oh my God, Survivor New Zealand.
Yeah, it was just the tide was moving, and so the barge was like shaking around. It was nothing other than that. And they had to just like reset the barge, and we had to go back and wait for a little bit. But earlier in the day, we had had that snake challenge, and I was complaining about the fact that Aaron had pulled my clothes, and I was like, that's not what's supposed to happen in Survivor. Like, you're supposed to like knock each other over or smack the idol. Like, there's a few things in Survivor New Zealand that are different, and I never really comprehended that. Like, that's where my super fan probably took over. And I got back from that challenge, and I was, from when we learned about the challenge, and I said to the guys, I was like, okay, cool. So like in this one, you make sure when you dive down, you've got to push down the wheel and then twist the rod. You don't want to just try and pull it through because you're probably going to get it stuck. And I was quite persistent on that. And Matt was like, no, that's not the case. And I was like, yeah, like definitely Maddie. Like, I've seen it before. Like, and he, Matt's a really great guy, and in that moment, he said to me the most, I just felt so awful after he talked to me. He goes, look, Dylan, you were wrong about this one challenge. Like, you're probably wrong about it now. If I were you, I'd just keep quiet. And I was like, oh my God. Because for me out there, like, Survivor was such a big deal to me, and to have someone, I guess, effectively shut me down on the thing that I thought I knew a lot about, it really cut me deep. And so, yeah, I had this moment of isolation, and I walked away, and Josh was the person who actually came over and had a big conversation with me about it, and just was like, look, I don't want to invade on your personal space if you're just trying to have a moment to yourself. But if you do have things you want to talk about, just know that I'm always here. Like, you can have a chat about it. It doesn't have to be a strategic thing. It doesn't have to be game chat. But if you just want to vent about things, I'll always listen. And that was a really cool moment. Like, that was something that cemented Josh as a person that I trusted, and it's why there are those scenes of us going forward where, you know, I'm saying to Josh, like, Josh, you know why I want to be here. Because for me, like, I never went out there wanting to talk about personal stories, but like, I didn't want to give personal content unless it felt comfortable to talk about personal content to the camera. And so he knew my personal story, and so that's what I was appealing to him on, but obviously the audience had no idea, so it just looked like I was trying to have another day because I was a fan. And then, yeah, like I said with Tara as well, she was like a mum. Like, she was camp mum. She reminds me of my mum. And so I just naturally felt very, very close to her. And, then Lisa as well, we got along about the game. Like, we would sit around and just laugh about silly things about other seasons. You know, she would play to her character and go, oh my gosh, my favorite Survivor ever is JT, because he's just such a noble person, and he's always just been so, you know, he's such a noble guy. I love that guy. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love Stephen Fishback. Like, we could be like New Zealand, you know, JT and Fishback, because that's your character arc and this is my character arc, and let's do that. And she'd be like, ha ha ha, okay, I don't know. And you know, so I felt like I had really good connections over there. And obviously, as the game progressed, I worked on other connections with people, and I tried to make the most of the dying situation that you kind of saw me in.
Yeah, I could tell that your relationship with Josh always seemed really close, closer than with the other Kung Kao members. So I guess this is jumping forward a bit, and we'll go back to Kung Kao. But why then was it Josh over Matt and Adam when you had that position of power at the swap?
So I got really emotional on day 12 when I thought I was going home. And that's where, for me, all the little things I was doing broke me down. And I saw my game falling apart. And so moving into the Josh vote, I knew that it had to be Josh because of the kind of person he was. You know, like he came up to me, someone who's not in his alliance, and basically said, if you need someone, I'm here. And for me, that's just, like, it's a rare human moment that doesn't ever happen in Survivor, I don't think. And I viewed that and I was like, that's such a threat. And it was one of these emotional things that I had to deal with again. And I just said to myself, the last time you played emotionally, you freaked out and you ruined what you did have in the game. So you need to just be strategic. It needs to be a logical decision. Josh is the glue of Kung Kao. He's holding the entire alliance together. So if you get rid of him, you open up everyone else, and it just needs to be Josh. And I did have a huge dilemma walking into that tribal council. I genuinely thought that it was going to be 3 votes on Aaron and 3 votes on Josh, and that I would make the deciding vote. And I was very close to writing Aaron's name down at that tribal council, which would have been disastrous for me. It would have been, you know, a 3-2-1-1 split, and Josh would have gone home, and I would have had zero trust with anyone. But, you know, like in that moment, he said a few things about his relationship with Brad at tribal council. And there were just things that I was like, I need to make the right decision for the game, because that's the game I want to play. I want to play logically, and I want to get to the end and say, these are the logical decisions I made, and this is why I deserve, you know, the $1 million. It might have been cold and not nice to be around sometimes, but I was calculated, and that's the way I wanted to play. And that was just one of those moves. I was like, it needs to be calculated, and it needs to be cold, and I have to switch off my emotions, because if I don't, you know, like Josh will still be here and I might not be. So that's what it was. It was just about being super strategic in that moment and really doing the thing that made the most sense and not being hyper emotional about anything.
Yeah. Without Josh, was there any chance of you working with any of those other Kung Kao members after the swap, or was it just too far gone with your relationship? Like, not even after the swap, even maybe later to merge, if you met up with some other Kung Kao members, was that ever going to be on the table, or were you just like done with all of them?
I walked into Chani, and I needed Chani to believe that I had enemies on Kung Kao. And that's something that's a strategy that I kind of implemented when I was at Kung Kao. I had this idea where I thought, if everyone around me thinks that absolutely nobody wants to work with me and I still have social connections, then I can maneuver my way through the entire game. It's those little things that I did at that challenge where, you know, I made the sassy comments about Chani voting out woman. And then I said to Aaron, like, I'm not high-fiving you because you kicked me. Like, I was like, that was me outwardly saying to the Kung Kao Alliance, like, you need to keep me because I would never flip on you, and I would never work with Aaron because look at how despicable he is. And I got to Aaron and I explained that kind of stuff to him. And I did that stuff on Chani as well. I was like, you know what? I don't like Brad. Brad needs to go. Brad's so cocky, but I had a connection with Brad because the night that Keisha went home, and this is me jumping all over the show, but the night that Keisha went home, Brad actually talked to me before it, and he said, look, I want to give you a heads up, you're not going home tonight, just chill out. And I was like, really? I'm not going home. And for me, like, I was super frantic that afternoon because I thought I was going home, and I had done all these little things, and I talked to Josh and I talked to Brad, and I'd said to them, like, look, I will stick with you guys. Like, there's no way I would flip. Like, I appealed to them, and I was like, I would do anything if you save me and let me live longer in this dream, because this is what I want. When I was getting ostracized, I didn't believe that it was working. And so I was frantic for tribal council, but then Brad came up to me and said, look, you're not going home. And I asked him who he was voting for. And I said, look, just tell me who to vote for and I'll vote for that person. It's all good. Like, I don't care. Like, I just want to keep my game alive. And he wouldn't tell me who it was for obvious reasons, because there was a bit of idle paranoia out there and people thought that I would, you know, pull something over on them all. But I think that speaks to the fact that I was able to build relationships with people that weren't necessarily seen on camera, because you know, there was the obvious narrative of me just being the guy who was universally hated. And yeah, like, Brad and I certainly saw Brad as an ally moving forward, but I only saw him as an ally if people like Josh and Matt weren't around.
Right.
And I think I've had a chat to JT about it, and JT said, you know, after he saw Josh go, suddenly Brad started talking to JT about working together because Brad freaked out. And I think Brad leaned into male alliances because that was just easier. And he just wanted, I guess he just wanted people around him that were perceived threats as well. He was playing that game because obviously Brad's a big guy and he's a walking target, really. And so, you know, for him to have people around him, like in that kind of meat shield way is a great thing for him. And yeah, I was willing to do that for him and be his meat shield. And I know that if I got to the merge, there would be some kind of connection there and I could work back in with that. And the same thing with Lisa. Like, I know that Lisa, you know, voted for me at that first tribal council, but she was left relatively in the dark about what was going on there. And even, you know, after that vote, she was one of those people that came up to me and said, look, I know tonight was awful, but I'm really glad that your survivor dream didn't end tonight. Like, I'm really happy for you. And so I knew that there were connections there that I could use. And Lisa, especially for me, was a huge person that I thought I could trust and I could work with because she was like me in that she saw things logically. And I never tried to appeal to her on an emotional level. I was like, she's a fan, so like she'll understand if I'm like trying to explain moves to her because she's obviously seen it. She might not agree with it, but she'll definitely like entertain the ideas. And then, you know, Tara and I, despite what happened in that tribal council where she called me out and said, I can't believe you used my name. Like, I believed we had a connection there as well. That was interesting because prior to the tribal council, Adam and Tess had kind of cornered me and said, would you vote Tess out? And I said, well, if the numbers were there, I honestly would. Like, I'm just going to be honest with you because that's the kind of game that I was playing. And then they said, well, if it's not Tessa, who would you vote out? And I said, I guess we would have to vote out Tara. And they were like, okay. And then I walked off straight away from that conversation and I went up to Tara and I said, look, mate, like, I'm going to be honest. I've just said this about you. Like, it's not malicious. I don't want to get rid of you. And I don't think anyone would. It's just they gave me a name and I had to give them a name that wasn't within their core alliance because then they would start targeting me. And so when she came back from that tribal council and she said, oh, I'm disappointed you used my name, I was a little bit like, okay, Tara, but like we had this conversation and I don't know where this anger is coming from now because we've talked through this. I genuinely believe that I had connections, you know, with the Kung Kals. And I think there was potentially that concern from the Chinese that they thought I might have connections, despite what I was saying about how much I despised, Kung Kao. And for me, I was definitely willing to go where the numbers were and I didn't really mind who was going home. I kind of had a bit of a Sandra-esque, you know, vibe to my game in that sense. And I almost wanted to play a little bit like Tony as well, and that I would just switch from side to side, but do it in a way that made the most sense so that people at the end could see the strategy and appreciate it and not want to, you know, chastise me for that. So.
So do you think it was those connections that were the reason that they took Keisha out over you? Like, what from your perspective was the reason that they took Keisha out before they took you?
So yeah, like I think it is those connections. And like, as you see in the edit, like I looked like I was dead man walking. There's no way no one's going to work with me. And I really wanted people to believe that. Like, you know, I did those subtle things to make sure that people thought there's absolutely no way he could flip on us. He's always going to be here. He's going to be a number that will stick with us. And Keisha was, bless her heart, like she did so much to try and save me. And in the process, she, you know, made herself a bigger target than me because she was actively playing. And I knew that for the best thing for my game going forward after the conversation with Adam was to just try and reduce my target as much as possible, try and make out that I was definitely not, you know, any kind of strategic threat. And I was just there and I was, you know, I was just a non-entity that would just be happy to be dragged along. It even got to the point where Brad, you know, in the shelter that night after the tribal council, we were having a chat about everything. And I just said, look, mate, I'm really grateful. I'm so grateful that you kept me around. Like, I'm still in shock, but I'm so thankful. And I just want to say how much it means to me that you decided that I should stay and not Keisha. And Brad kind of foolishly said to me, like, look, mate, it's all good. Like, we've just got to stick together if the tribe switch comes, he goes, we've got numbers, we need to stick together. And you're lucky because you've just assured yourself that you're going to be eighth place. And I was like
Alex Bell.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it was so funny when he said that. And I was like, oh, Brad, that's so nice. I'm so happy that I get to be eighth place. And of course you walk away from that conversation. You go, I don't want to be eighth place, but I guess it's, you know, like I'm being told like you can be the bottom of the Kung Kao Alliance for the entire game. And then when we get to the merge, it's just eight of us and you're the next one to go. So
yeah.
Yeah. Like I have enough, you know, forward thinking to go, that's not what I want to do. And I thought, well, there's six Chinese. I could be seven over there. So
yeah, eighth's not even an attractive offer.
Yeah, like you could be eighth place. And I'm like, okay, cool. And my thing was, you know, like I could be eighth place. But then the reality of that situation is I'm probably going to be third place in that scenario because I've been dragged along by Kung Kao. And then I'm obviously not the most liked person in that social circle. And so, you know, because there's people that dominate that conversation about their opinions on me. And I thought, the worst, what's going to happen is I'm going to get to eighth and then Brad, Matt and Josh are going to look at me and go, oh, look, here's a goat. Like, let's drag him right to the end. And I would be like that no vote finalist that gets there because I was simply the one that obviously no one was going to vote for. And I just didn't want that to be the legacy that I left on Survivor NZ. I didn't want to be the person who was beat down and then dragged to the end and just kind of meh. I was much more content with being the person who took risky moves and, you know, like, and played the game for what it was and tried really hard to get as far as possible. So, yeah, I didn't get eighth place like I was promised with the Kung Kaos, but I'm much more content with the fact that I'm sitting in 11th place, knowing that I left it all out there and I felt like I got a really full experience of the whole Survivor game, you know, yeah, minus obviously the merge and the individual immunities. So,
yeah. Who did you bond particularly with when you went to the new Charny and you met those three new people?
I obviously felt like I bonded with Aaron.
Yeah.
If I'm talking perspectives of Aaron, he just came off to me like an alpha bro. And the honest read I had on Aaron was that he was just JT's meat shield. And I said that to Aaron. I said, look, I said to him, the perception that Kung Kao have of you guys is that JT's running the camp and you're his sidekick, or you're like the guy who enforces all the rules because you've got the strength, I guess. And he laughed about it, which, you know, we called him out for what it was, I guess. And I said to him, I was like, look, like, I can't offer you much, but I can offer you a strategic gameplay. And I think that I could be the kind of person that helps you reunite with the Chinese when we get to merge. And that's where the conversation started about throwing the challenges, because I basically laid out the entire Kung Kao, you know, hierarchy for them. I said, there's the three boys on the top. It's Adam and Tessa. And then the two mums sit on the bottom of that and they're not budging because mm-hmm. I've been told it's the eight of us to the end and we're going to be the top eight. And I was like, I don't want to be the eighth place person who gets dragged. Like, I want to play and I want to play hard. And I know you guys have six people and I can be your seventh and we can take the game into our own hands. And I was really bold with it. And I just went out to him and I said, we should throw challenges and get rid of Matt, Adam and Josh, because those people sit super high in the Kung Kao hierarchy and it would totally shift the game. And he was obviously quite taken aback by all the information I was sharing, as you would be. But I was just like, look, I need to get this out and you need to know everything before these boys get to you and try and, you know, like poison your thoughts about me. And so we came up with this mutual agreement that we would win the next challenge, and then we would see who went home. And then if the person who went home was a Charny,
yeah,
that they would work with me.
Right.
Because it was, it then becomes obvious that it is Kung Kao versus Charny still in these new tribes. And so, yeah, like obviously the edit paints that the three Charnys had a lot of power and persuasiveness in that, but I felt like I definitely initiated that conversation because I started that ball rolling from the second I got over there. And yeah, like, I mean, I feel like that was my power move in the game, at least for those first seven episodes that I had. And so, yeah.
Yeah. But
that's what happened.
But the vote throwing, I mean, the challenge throwing strategy, but you didn't end up throwing the challenge in episode seven. Is that right?
Do you know what? There was one person trying to win that challenge and it was Dave. I think every single, like the 11 other people out there were trying to throw the challenge. Dave was really big on trying to win that challenge for obvious reasons. We obviously, like, it's one of those hard things. And Dave and I butted heads a lot because I viewed Dave super emotional. He would make decisions, you know, off the cuff and he never logically thought through things. And I would sit with him and I would explain to him numbers and I would say, this is, you know, the six that we have on Charny and this is the six we have on Kung Kao. I sat down with him at one stage and I did what Michaela Bradshaw done in Millennials versus Gen X. And I had sticks and I had twigs and I was like, this is us and this is them. We throw a challenge, we get rid of one of these guys and we move into a merge setting with numbers.
Yeah.
Because for us, we actually thought the merge was coming at 12. Well, I mean, I thought the moon was coming at 12. And so that's why the power play with Josh had to happen at that moment, because we just didn't want him at the merge. And then it obviously didn't appear till 10, which threw a bit of a spanner in the works, but I guess we can get to that later. But yeah, like I always laid out those, that like the scenarios with these guys. Like I was super long game in that whole thing. I was thinking about day 39, you know, like after day 12, after I knew I had new life in that game, I was like, right, let's just start doing it. Let's think about what we're doing. I wanted to be super smart and super strategic after that, that time where I got almost cut out of the game. And I thought, look, I'm just going to take it into my own hands. And I always relayed long game plans with each individual member of Chani. And they were never plans that weren't succinct with each other. Obviously, I wasn't going to Renee and saying, I promise you final three. And then Dave, I promise you final three. I was talking, you know, top six with these guys, like, it'll be the five Chani's, it'll be me, you can pull me to the end, it'll be fine. Like, no one on Chani is going to, no one on Kung Kao is going to respect me. They're not going to want to vote for me. And then you've got the, also the votes of the Chani's. So effectively dragging me to the end is going to help you win the game. I thought I was really convincing in those plans. Obviously, Renee bought into that kind of stuff a lot more because she was there trying to save me. And I do think that Aaron and I had a really good relationship. He was... one of the guys who was, he was constantly coming to me in Kung Kao asking me about the information that was being shared about me. So there were a lot of stories that were floating around at Chani about the kind of person that I was, which was really hard to hear, but at the same time, Survivor, and it's just what it is. And like the Kung Kao boys were saying all manner of things. I think at one point Aaron came up to me and he goes, I'm just going to be honest. Like, if this is true, I cannot work with you. No. And I was like, okay. I was like, go ahead. Like, what have you been told? And he goes, so I've just heard through the grapevine that you were over at Kung Kao saying that Tara doesn't deserve to be here. Like, she's a bad mother. Like, she's a bad person, and she doesn't deserve her place. And I looked at him and I was like, why on earth would I say that about Tara? I was like, I love Tara. Like, there's nothing. I was like, the only thing Tara's done in this game to offend me is that one time she put sugar in our rice and I didn't like it. Like, that's the most offensive thing that she's ever done. And I know that was one of those lies that the guys were saying to someone like Aaron, because he's a father, and you know, like, that kind of thing appeals to Aaron, and he doesn't want to align with someone who's talking bad about one of the other parents on the show. And so I just said to him, I was like, look, it's, the lies are going to come and they're going to come fast, and these guys are going to say whatever they need to about me just to make sure that I am not the person you want to work with. And this was while Josh was still in the game, mind you. So I was on a really tense moment where I was trying to figure out if these guys still trusted me based on all the stuff that was coming. And credit to the Chinese that they stuck with me, because, you know, when you've got three people coming at you with some vitriol about one person, it's very easy to go with that majority and say, okay, these three must be telling the truth because they're all on the same wavelength about it. But they stuck with me and I was stoked at that moment.
Well, from what we saw, they never got that full trust with you. And that's what Aaron says when he votes you out. Do you think that was the reason why, or why do you think that you never gained that full trust with them?
I think it does, again, just come down to that overall perception in the game. I know I went into Chani really strong, and I knew I would put a target on my back straight away. And as you see in like the challenges, I started putting my hand up and I started really, you know, performing it. Like, in my eyes, I started performing at puzzles, and I knew that was what I was good at. And there were a lot of things that I was doing that I was like, this is dangerous because I'm putting myself out there and I'm becoming a target. Even long gaming with those Chani's, I felt like I was making myself a massive target, but I was just doing what I had to do to survive another day, because it was, it was rough out there. And like watching it back and seeing that they didn't trust me was pretty tough. But I guess for me, like, I was just willing to trust anyone at any stage because I had felt so on the outs with my initial tribe. And so, you know, when they said they wanted to work with me, I was like, great, I found people that I can instantly trust. And it didn't pan out that way, but, I certainly had a lot of trust in those guys, and
Yeah, but going to the vote last night, they obviously had this choice between you and Matt, and the internet has widely condemned their choice to go for you. I kind of defended the rationale of why they might have done that with the numbers of the vote still in my podcast with Tessa from Australian Survivor, so you guys check that out if you haven't listened to it yet. But Dylan, from your perspective, why do you think they made the choice that they did?
Do you know what? I've listened to the start of your podcast, actually.
That was so quick.
Yeah. I know. I see your podcast. I've listened to the start of it and I've heard your theory around it. I actually believe there's a lot of validity in what you were saying.
Thank you.
It means so much to me. Yeah. We actually knew JT was going home. That's a spanner in the works, and this is where it gets really confusing for me. Like I say, there's elements of validity in your statement, but so after the challenge, JT says to us guys, like, I feel really bad. Like he basically said farewell to his Chani friends because that's how close they all were. They just wanted to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They had that really awesome connection, and so JT just out of his own heart just wanted to say to Dave, Aaron and Renee that he was leaving the game that afternoon, and he was really gutted, but he'd see them on the outside kind of thing. And so I think there was this moment where the Chani's just had to figure out the best numbers that they had going forward.
Yeah.
And I was pushing for the fact that, it would be stupid to get rid of me. I was like, I'm obviously a vote with you guys. Like I remember saying to Dave, if it comes down to us going to Rocks, I will go to Rocks for you guys because I believe in investing in this alliance. This is what I'm saying to you right now. And like at that moment, I was definitely in on investing with that alliance. Like it's about taking the moments you have with each individual, alliance and investing at that time and place. And so I was super willing to go to Rocks because there was obviously the vote steal. And in my head, I was like, it's going to be 5-5. But I think we've got a bit more pull in there. I actually did throw out Adam's name because Adam was obviously pushing himself as a person to keep around because he had Tessa, and Maddie was pushing himself around as the person as a person because he had Brad.
Right.
And for me, I obviously connected a lot better with Maddie, and I was like, look, if we're going to go on with numbers, I trust Maddie more. The reason that you don't see us wanting to vote out Maddie and the Josh vote, because it is talked about and it is brushed over that Dave glances over it because he's his friend. But I remember having a conversation with Dave and I was like, Josh needs to go because Josh will not budge. Maddie can stay because I think Maddie's malleable and Maddie would shift with everything. Like he would move with the alliances if he saw the majority switching. Like that's the kind of person, that's the kind of player that I perceived Matt to be. And so it came down to it and I got told that the vote was Maddie. And I was just like, I'm going to have to stick with it. Like they're telling me, Matt, I'm going to have to stick with it. I need to show these guys that I trust them. And if I just vote with them and I don't push my ideas on these guys anymore, then potentially there'll be another couple of days in here for me. Everyone was pretty clear on Matt. Obviously that conversation with Adam and I was maybe the most genuine conversation, even though it wasn't genuine out there. But it was like a real moment we had where we just talked about it. And he was like, I'm really gutted. Like I have to vote out Matt. And I was like, I know, like Matt's actually quite a good guy. Because Maddie and I had good conversations about real life. And so like at Chani, when he was down and out, he shared a lot. So, I'd built a really good connection with him, but at the same time, it was time to put on the non-emotional face and just take out the people who made the most sense to take out. I had some interesting conversations that day with a few of the guys at Chani about why we shouldn't keep Adam. And so it frustrates me that those things never eventuated.
Yeah.
Because for me, the big thing, I talked to Aaron about it, and I went to Aaron and I said, look, what happened at that first outpost? Because to me, there was still a few pieces that I hadn't pieced together and I just wanted clarity. And he said, JT came back and said that Tessa got an idol clue. And I was like, perfect. And I said, so we know that she has an idol clue. He's also trying to sell us this idea that he is in with Tessa and that he can bring her over to our side. I was like, but what did Adam exactly tell you about the idol clue? And he goes, oh, Adam doesn't know about the idol clue. And I was like, what do you mean he doesn't know about the idol clue? And he goes, oh, Adam said that Tessa definitely doesn't have an idol clue. And yeah. I was like, well, Tessa does. So either Adam genuinely doesn't know about the idol clue and he's being played by Tessa, or Adam knows about the idol clue and he's playing you and he's just waiting to get back to Kung Kao so that he can flip on you guys. I was like, there's no logical reason to keep him and he needs to go. And that was a hard discussion for me to have with someone because for me, and I think this is probably why you don't see Adam's name come up a lot, is because I viewed Adam as a person that I would love to sit with at the end.
My God, not 40 days of you guys together, Dylan. I think you would kill us all.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It would be the most ridiculous final three. But I genuinely saw Adam as someone who wasn't outwardly playing. He's obviously doing a really good job of, masking his strategic plays. But I just saw him as someone who wasn't outwardly playing. And I know that people get to the end and I know that they sometimes struggle to articulate the strategies that they had when they're not obvious. Because it's hard to articulate a strategic gameplay when people haven't seen anything of that. Especially when you're the guy who is just kind of the good vibes around camp. And yeah, so I definitely saw final three potential with myself, Adam, and Tessa, because I always wanted to go to the end with a pair. Like, it never made sense to not go with a pair. I just watched, you know, Big Brother with Paul and all those pairs at the end, and I was like obsessed with this idea of going with a pair. So
yeah,
there's a bit of like a reality TV crossover, but yeah, like that's why I guess Adam's never got brought up. But at the same time, there were definitely conversations about why he needed to go and why Matt needed to stay. And eventually they landed on the fact that, you know, Adam and Matt needed to stay. And obviously Matt stayed because Day was friends with Matt, and they bought into the idea that Adam would be someone who could shift numbers over to the Charney Alliance. So yeah, I think there's validity in what you're saying, in that the Charneys needed to shift with the times. And unfortunately, I wasn't a person that was in that could help them, because there was no perceived relationships that I could bring to the table, because I was working so hard on having the Charneys believe that I just didn't like any of the Kung Kaos. So, you know, strategies came back to bite me in the ass, but it's all good.
Yeah. Happens. Well, with Adam, I mean, we saw it was particularly volatile with your relationship with him, with the way, I guess, that he treated you. Was that mostly confessional, or did you really know that impression out there? And also, why do you think it was so volatile?
So I obviously referenced day nine, where it was like a pretty low day for me. And that same day was the day that Keisha came up to me and was like, hey, look, I just think I want to, she had a chat with me basically and just said, I think Adam and Tessa aren't liking you. And if we want to work with them, you need to just chill out a little bit, because I think they don't like your presence around camp. And this was an instance where I got really emotional about that, because I was like, oh my God, like, I think people love me. Like, I don't think I've ever had a reason for someone to say I hate Dylan. And so that freaked me out, and I had a moment. I stepped away from the camp, and what happened after that was that I just noticed every little thing that Adam and Tess were doing.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there were little things, but there were also massive things. Like, I would walk into camp and I'd sit down and I'd go to have a chat with people, and then, you know, Adam and Tess would like get up and walk away, or I'd be in the vicinity of them and they would just walk off, because for some reason, you know, like, me being in their area was just very, like, they just didn't like it. Yeah, like, I noticed that, and I started removing myself, because I just wanted the Kung Kao unit to remain relatively tight, because I believed if we were tight, we were never going to go to tribal council and I could get onto a tribe switch and work my magic. But yeah, like, that's just something that happened. And I think the only explanation I can bring it down to with Adam and I is that I think Adam and I are very similar personalities. I think that a lot of Adam's theatrics that you see on the TV show are things that I probably could have brought to the table as well. And I think I certainly did that in the early parts of the game. Like, I'm just an animated person. Like, I'm out there, I'm expressive. Like, I kind of feel like
a jury face.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. I would have been the Eliza on the jury. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I know, we missed an opportunity, but yeah, like, I think that Adam and I are just two people that are very similar. And Adam saw me in a way that it's almost like, Adam kind of looked at the tribe and said, well, the tribe will either want me or Dylan. They're not going to want both of us. So I just have to make sure that it's me and not Dylan.
Yeah.
So fair play on him. Like, cause I looked at it and I was like, well, Adam, I can work together, cause we're actually really, really similar. But, I guess he just wanted to be the only, you know, theatrical person out there. I think the confessionals hurt a little bit, if I'm honest. For me, like, the whole game, bar those few times when I got super emotional, like, I just wanted to play logically. And so I would go into confessionals and, you know, I would talk about people and I'd talk about how I didn't rate them as. Terrible.
Sorry, you cut out again. If you can just go from, I would go into confessionals and I would talk about people and how.
Yeah. Like, I would go into confessionals and I would talk about people as well, as we all do. And, you know, I'd talk about Tessa as a classic example, and I'd say, oh my goodness, Tessa is terrible at the game of Survivor. Like, she came back and told us this ridiculous lie about mattresses. I don't believe that for a second. And like, yeah, exactly. And let's get the mattress in there. Okay. I wanted to bring up mattresses. And for me, I'm okay with that kind of stuff. And so when I see content like that about me, where it's like, Dylan is bad at this and this is why, like, I don't get offended by that, because to me, that's game chat. And that's what you do in the game of Survivor. I would never go into confessional and go, Tessa's stupid.
Yeah.
Because there's no real world context behind that. And I don't know Tessa in the real world. So I don't have any right to speak about her on a personal level because I only know her in the game. Like I think I can know her in a personal sense, in the sense that, you know, like we're relating to each other, but I'm never properly going to know her personally because we're in Survivor. And so a lot of the comments obviously that are coming across to me, they feel really personal. Like, I don't like Dylan, he's a dick. Or like, who are we going to laugh at when Dylan's gone? Like, there's no real strategic value behind those comments. And so those things really hurt when people say that. Like, Josh can call me a goat all he wants. That's a game perception, and I'm okay with that because I signed up to play Survivor. And, you know, you're going to be judged on the way you play the game, but I never expected to be judged purely on what I believe are really, like, silly things to talk about. And they're not game-related. They're really personal. So, yeah, they suck, but that's just the way people wanted to play the game. And, you know, they're still there and I'm not. So maybe I did something wrong.
What are your relationships like now outside of the game with some of those people?
There's not a lot of communication between the people that were in that game that I didn't have a good relationship with.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, you know, like I've reached out and I've had chats with people about, why things were said and, you know, I just wanted clarity. Like I wanted to know that they were going through something and that they just said these things off the cuff and it didn't mean anything, but I guess the explanations that I've had back from people were just very, in my eyes, I don't deem them as satisfactory. The explanations I'm getting, like I'm getting explanations like, oh, I was tired and hungry. And I wasn't thinking straight. Like you can't be mad at me for saying these things. And I'm like, but I was also tired and hungry. Like we were all tired and hungry and no one's saying, like no one else is saying that. So yeah, like, I'm not going to lie and say that they're all my relationships outside of the game are really great. But at the same time, I did go in there with the mindset of I'm competing against 17 people. And if I come out of this with one good relationship or 17, like as long as I played Survivor, like it's fine. Like it's,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm massive on having game separation. Like it drove me mad at that challenge when, you know, in episode 7 when we had to call it quits because people, in my opinion, were getting too involved in what was going on outside of the game and bringing that in. And that makes me uncomfortable when the game takes that kind of personal or like real life thing and brings it in.
Yeah. But when you look back now and your experience at the time and your memories of it now, like, is that a positive thing?
Which part's a positive?
The game. I mean, I guess the experience as a whole.
Yeah, as a whole experience, like I've loved every minute of it. You know, like you go into Survivor knowing that there are going to be highs and lows. You don't expect how high the highs are going to be and how low the lows are going to be. But like I say, like I went into the game of Survivor knowing it was the game, and you try and leave as much as you can back in the game because at the end of the day, I'm, you know, one of 18 people, you know, now 34 people in New Zealand who have played Survivor, and that's such a like an exclusive club to be in, and like the privilege of being able to play Survivor was never lost on me while I was out there. Like yeah. it was horrendous some days, but I was always just, all I could think was at the end of the day, you are playing Survivor and this is the coolest thing in the world. You know, I'd walk into challenges and the challenges would overwhelm me because I was like, I've seen this on, you know, so many different seasons of Survivor, or, you know, like even just when Matt would say, you know, Survivor's ready, like that was such a cool thing for me. Like those little things for me out there, I really appreciated them. And I guess for me, the biggest thing about going out there was really living it and enjoying every moment as a fan and hoping that would translate across in the edit so that fans could see that and go, whoa, this is cool. Like there's a fan living his dream. And I vicariously live through fans. Like I always do it. Like those people that have those dorky moments out on the island when something, you know, Survivor-esque happens, like I love that kind of stuff. And so that's, I guess, the outward portrayal that I wanted to have. I don't know if it was the outward portrayal that I did have, but it was certainly mindset for me after the Keisha blindside. It was really a big mindset change for me when that happened because I just honestly wanted to enjoy every single moment I had out there.
Yeah, borrowed time, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I definitely thought that I was the person on the way out. And so I was like, you know, I might as well just enjoy it now and just have a great time. Not to say I wasn't enjoying it before then, but I certainly just relished the moments, you know, after that. And you probably see in some of the confessionals that I make, and I look at them now and I go, oh, I'm such an idiot. Like, coming back from Tribal Council when we blindsided Josh, and I was super smarmy about it, and I looked at it and I cringed so much because, you know, like I was enjoying the moment, but I was just enjoying it a little bit too much. And yeah, that was an uncomfortable moment actually for me, watching myself on screen when I was being a little bit, you know, kind of rubbing it in Matt's face that I'd got rid of Matt and I was this big game player now. So yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you had a near survivor death experience with the patient when you came back, and you enjoyed it, and I think that was a good attitude.
Yeah, like I just wanted to have fun, and I think, you know, it's actually really interesting that like the fan reception's been incredible, but the one thing that I've always had from people is that there's a lot of people who watch Survivor who I think fall into my archetype, and they look at it and they go, I've had a lot of people actually say to me like, I'm nervous about playing Survivor because I don't want the experience that you had, and I think I would get that because I'm like you. And obviously, like, the show is massively edited, and you know, you only see the highlights and the lowlights, and it guts me to hear that people like are concerned or worried about playing Survivor because that I guess edit is coming across. But I guess if anyone is thinking about playing Survivor and that's their only reservation about wanting to do a Survivor, like, I just go for it. Like, yeah, I had some crappy moments, but like the highs out there, like, they massively outweigh the lows. You know, like winning first immunity is like a feeling I could never describe, or like winning that slide puzzle or the slat puzzle. Like, I could never describe to anyone how amazing that feeling was. It was just the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were
there any other moments like that, or just any other great moments that we didn't see that you wanted to talk about?
Do you know what? I think my highlights were showing. I think that the really good times for me, like winning those puzzles, I think those were my highlights, because you go on Survivor and you want to prove that you can do it, and you want to prove that you're a competitor. And I was so competitive, and I just wanted to show people that I was able to do things. And those were my high moments. It was winning that slide puzzle and looking over at Brad and having a cheeky smile on my face, like, haha, like, I won the puzzle, like, you never let me do puzzles, but look at me, I can do puzzles. Like, you know, it was just, yeah, I think my highlights are shown. I think they had to show my highlights because it made, you know, my story a little bit more compelling because I actually had highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. But would you play again if the offer came up?
Oh, 100%. I'd go out there tomorrow. Like, if they said to me, like, look, we're doing a captain season and we want JT and Dylan back, I'd be like, sign me up, I'm coming out tomorrow, you know?
I like that idea.
Yeah, I've got a lot of love for the Survivor franchise. I went through some pretty rough times, and I had a pretty rough run last year. And Survivor was one of those things. Actually, the Survivor community was one of those things that kept me going on, and you know, made me realize things about myself that were really good about myself. And so I've always had a huge part of my heart devoted to Survivor. It's yeah, hugely personal to me. And so yeah, I'd always do it again. I'd do anything to do with Survivor, I'm all for it.
Well, thank you for coming on this podcast and talking about your game with us. It was a treat for all of us, I think. And I think maybe softens the blow of a very, very brutal 15 minutes that we all had to watch on Sunday night. But it was great to talk to both you and JT about your games and get some more insight into the pre-merge before we look ahead to the merge next week.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I think, you know, you might have lost the two people that dominated screen time, but now there's plenty of screen time for someone else, and I can't wait to see who emerges, and I can't wait to see what happens. It's going to be pretty exciting, I think.
Well, you guys can hashtag SuperFanRedWedding. That's what I'm naming this week, and that's what I'm going to be hashtagging all week. So you can hashtag that. You can hashtag KnowItAls. You can hashtag RHAP. You can find me on Twitter at Shannon Gates. Where can people find you, Dylan?
So I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well, and it's just at the Dylan Conrad on both of those, platforms.
Yeah, and follow JT as well, because I didn't ask for his follow information. He's at the Bad Jelly, right?
Yeah, he's at the Bad Jelly. Or just look through my tweets. I'm probably tweeting at him about something. So
true. If you just go on Survivor Twitter, they'll find you both. They don't even have to search.
Yeah, it's very simple. We're there.
Well, you guys can also subscribe, Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed, or the Survivor New Zealand Wrap-Ups feed. Leave us a review. Thank you guys for listening to this bonus podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And Dylan, thank you for being here. Thanks to JT. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.